Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Here in Washington, there's a heavy security presence for the presidential inauguration ceremony for Joseph R. Biden Jr. National Guard troops are gathered in and around our Voice of America headquarters, located close by the inauguration staging area. Joe Biden takes the oath of office during a difficult time in American history, with a country divided by political turmoil and shaken by a deadly pandemic. But on a lighter note, like other presidents before him, 78-year-old Joe Biden takes the oath of office with a love and appreciation for sports. Before beginning his nearly 50-year political career, Joe Biden played baseball and American-style football, and he was described as a standout wide receiver on his high school football team. Joe Biden also credits sports with helping him overcome a speech impediment. In his memoir, Promises to Keep, on Life and Politics, Joe Biden writes, and I quote, "As much as I lack confidence in my ability to communicate verbally, I always had confidence in my athletic ability. Sports were as natural to me as speaking was unnatural. And sports turned out to be my ticket to acceptance and more. I wasn't easily intimidated in a game, so even when I stuttered, I was always the kid who said, 'Give me the ball.'" Well, the Sunny Side of Sports ball kicks off in Cameroon, where it's the fifth day of competition at the African Nations Championship Football Tournament, or CHAN. Our VOA football fans will remember CHAN is for African players who ply their trade in their respective home leagues. In Wednesday's matches, Cameroon will host Mali in Yaounde, and that will be followed by another game in Yaounde between Burkina Faso and Zimbabwe. Cameroon and Mali currently top the Group A table with 3 points each after one match played, while Burkina Faso and Zimbabwe have no points. In Group D results Tuesday, Zambia topped Tanzania 2-0 and Guinea beat Namibia 3-0. Both matches were played in Cameroon's southwestern port city of Limbe. African football analyst Clyde Tu thinks the Chipolopolo of Zambia are poised to advance to the CHAN knockout stages. In an interview with Iron Mike Mbonye, Clyde had this to say.
The CHAN hasn't entirely been bad for Southern Africa. You see a team like Zambia that is, along with South Africa, has dominated COSAFA by winning the original tournament, is showing the strength and mental in the CHAN, getting a good result, which I believe will propel them to the next round. I believe Zambia have the capabilities to win the remaining games and go to the next round. They are a top side and have a top coach, and you can expect nothing but the best from the team. Well, with Zim, I think they need to focus more on the football. There's a lot of off-the-field things that are happening. Allegations of them accusing Cameroon of witchcraft after they found a dead bat on the pitch. They should just focus on football and leave these other things that have nothing to do with the ball and making excuses. They need to just get down and get dirty, roll up their sleeves. Namibia is a top side, but I think the problem is to come from the issue with the COVID when football was put to a halt. I think Namibia struggled. They are showing a lack of match fitness, and I think they can get better. They can get better. They are a strong side. They are capable of playing better. But yeah, at the moment, they just need to put their heads down and keep working.
Do you see any of the Southern African teams picking up from the second round games to make it to the knockout stage?
The team that I pick to go to the next round, I think Zambia, they have a strong team. They have a great coach, well experienced at this level. And I think they look hungry as well. So I think from what I'm seeing, I think they can go all the way and go to the next round and probably even the final. They're top side.
What's your assessment of the matches played so far at the CHAN tournament? Any surprises?
The matches so far, I think they have been okay. There's nothing too fancy, nothing too exciting. I think it's been good. It's been good. It hasn't been bad. But like any other day, you know, they always say you cannot be satisfied by just anything. So they can be better. They can be better. I think a lot of people are suggesting that there's a need to include players that are playing in Africa, but in other countries outside their own, I don't think that's the best thing that we need for the CHAN. There's a lot of other solutions that I do think about. But bringing in other players from other leagues, it's not going to help. I think let's keep it the way it is.
That's African football analyst Clyde Tu. And Clyde spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Sporty greetings. This is Clyde Tu, an African football analyst. You're listening to Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Dear respected friends, sports greetings. This is Milutin Mitchell-Sredovic, coach of Zambia national football team Chipolo Polo and former national coach of Uganda Cranes. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In English Premier League football news, the two Manchester clubs are in a tight race for the lead, and they'll both be on the pitch Wednesday evening. Manchester City is at home against Aston Villa, while Manchester United is on the road against Fulham. Ahead of the match, Man U's Norwegian manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer dismissed suggestions that his Portuguese playmaker Bruno Fernandes needs a rest. The 26-year-old Fernandes was named the Premier League's Player of the Month in February, June, November, and December of 2020, becoming the first player to win the award four times in a single calendar year. Overall, Fernandes has scored 27 goals and provided 17 assists since his arrival at Old Trafford in January 2020. But Fernandes hasn't been on the score sheet 20 days into 2021. However, Solskjaer told reporters the midfielder's form was not a cause for concern.
His form is very good. He was just voted the player of the month. He's not tired. No chance. He's one of the players who runs and covers the ground in every single game, very good at recovering, very good at recharging his batteries. And if he'd scored on his free kick, if he'd had a little bit of air on the ball when Luke put a cross in, he would have been lauded as the best player in the Premier League again. Since he come in, he's been absolutely immense. And no, he's not tired. If I ask him, there's absolutely no chance he'll say he's tired.
At the news conference, Solskjaer also talked about the role Bruno Fernandes plays on Man U.
Yeah, well, you know, he's expected to create goals, score goals, and sometimes the margins are against him. That free kick, I saw that one in. There's a couple of passes that he plays through, and it's just marginal if he's on or off. And so he's always on the verge of creating something, where even when he loses the ball, and that's the position I want him in, and that's what he's been told to do. Like, he has to be the creative one. I want him to play the passes he sees.
Entering Wednesday's matches, 6 points separated the top seven teams in the English Premier League. Man U manager Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comments.
Well, of course, we've had some tight games against the teams around us this season. It's going to be tight anyway. And I think only Tottenham or the teams around us have beaten us. We've not conceded many goals. We've not conceded Chelsea, City, Liverpool, which is also a strength to have. We've built some defensive momentum, and if you keep on winning the games that we have done lately, I think we've got a good chance of still staying competitive towards the end.
On Wednesday evening, Man U meets a Fulham team that is currently in the relegation zone in 18th place, 25 points behind Man U. Solskjaer sizes up his opponent.
I think they've had a very good turnaround from a slow start. I think they've made some very good signings towards the end of the window. And you can see after that, they're very well coached, Scott and the team. They trust their own organisation, team shape, and it's one of the hardest teams to break down. It's hard enough to go to Craven Cottage anyway, but at the moment they're really well structured on and off the ball, and they've got some players defensively very quick and strong, good on the ball, but also individually going forward they've got players who can make a difference. So it's another tough game in the Premier League.
That's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the manager of Manchester United. Man U has 37 points from 18 matches, putting it 1 point behind first place Leicester City, which beat visiting Chelsea Tuesday 2-0. Nigerian midfielder Wilfred Ndidi opened the scoring in the 6th minute, and James Maddison scored Leicester's second goal in the 41st minute. So right now, it's a very tight race in the Premier League. Leicester City leads with 38 points from 19 matches. Man U has 37 points from 18 matches. And Manchester City has 35 points from 17 matches. In one other Premier League result from Tuesday, West Ham United beat West Bromwich Albion 2-1. West Ham is currently in 7th place with 32 points from 19 matches. West Brom is in the relegation zone in 19th place with 11 points.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Squatty greetings, everyone. This is Ambassador Mary Onyale, Olympic medalist, 5-time African champion in the sprint event. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
In African athletics, the new world indoor record holder in the men's triple jump, Fabrice Zongo-Hugues of Burkina Faso, is set to compete again on Friday in France. 4 days ago, at another meet in France, Zongo became the first athlete to break 18 meters indoors, leaping 18.07 meters. The 27-year-old Zongo is studying electrical engineering in France, and he certainly has studied the triple jump, winning international medals all over the world. And I'm sure Fabrice Zongo-Hugues has his sights set on winning a medal at this year's Tokyo Olympics. With the Japanese capital still under a COVID-19 state of emergency, VOA's Gwen Uden joins us now with a report on the Olympics and the coronavirus vaccine. Sporty greetings, Gwen!
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Last December, Britain became the first nation in the world to administer a fully tested coronavirus vaccine and kicked off an immunization campaign against the global pandemic. And as preparations for the rescheduled games continue, Olympic organizers and the IOC are growing more confident that they too will have a vaccine in time for opening ceremony on July 23rd. IOC President Thomas Bach has said while it would not be mandatory for Olympic athletes to receive the vaccine, they'll be strongly encouraged to do so. Senior Olympics official Dick Pound said athletes should be given priority access to the vaccine so the Tokyo Games can go ahead as planned. But Dr. Kenji Ishii, a vaccination expert at the University of Tokyo, issued this warning for Olympic organizers.
Never put the Olympics as a hostage for distributing a vaccine too fast or in the wrong way.
Dr. Ishii tells Reuters News he believes the Olympics can be conducted safely without the vaccine, but he says a rushed rollout might overlook potentially dangerous side effects and leave athletes vulnerable.
We should be able to do the Olympics without everyone get immunized or vaccinated, first of all. Second of all, vaccine should be very safe, safely immunized to everybody in the right way and then hopefully very slowly to make sure these are safely distributed to the human being rather than rushing into the billions of people in a month. If something went wrong, all of us get, you know, sick.
Jason Kinderchuk is an infectious diseases expert at the University of Manitoba in Canada. He told Reuters he also believes the games can be held safely, but without a vaccine, countermeasures against COVID-19 must be in place.
I think that's the unfortunate reality is that there are a lot of people that looked at the announcements for the vaccines and thought, okay, this is our guarantee and kind of our golden ticket that 2021 everything goes back to normal. Well, you know what, in the meantime, until we get herd immunity, we're still doing all the regular infection prevention control stuff. So the things that people are unbelievably tired of hearing about in regards to masking and distancing and hygiene, all that stuff still applies.
And Kinderchuk thinks prioritizing vaccines for athletes would be a tough sell.
Trying to say to those people, well, you know, we need to be able to provide these athletes with vaccines because this is a part of our heritage and part of our kind of national pride. That's going to be a tough sell. And I think especially when you have a vaccine rollout program that hasn't been working very well, you're going to have a lot of people that are going to, I think, frankly, be quite angry and unhappy about that idea.
In a recent survey, 80% of those polled in Japan think the Tokyo Olympics should be delayed again or canceled altogether. But Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga said it is still possible to hold the games as planned because people around the world are beginning to receive a vaccine. The Prime Minister says in part, I want to start vaccines in Japan by the end of February. If we take appropriate measures, I think the feelings toward the Olympics will change. Since March of 2020, when the decision to postpone the Olympics was announced, the global numbers of positive cases and deaths caused by COVID-19 have skyrocketed. Like many nations, Japan is grappling with soaring coronavirus cases and a struggling economy. Prime Minister Suga has declared a a state of emergency for the Greater Tokyo region that will stay in effect through February 7th. Tokyo 2020 Committee President Yoshiro Mori said organizers should decide in February or March whether the risk of contracting COVID-19 has fallen low enough to allow spectators to attend the games in July. And he added, it would be absolutely impossible to cancel the games again, largely because the committee would not be able to retain its staff for another year. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Charlie Spedding won an Olympic bronze medal for Britain at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, where he finished third in the men's marathon. Charlie wrote about his running career in his autobiography, From Last to First. And Charlie also talked about it with the energetic Andy Edwards. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to their conversation. Here's Andy.
Welcome, Charlie Spedding, a runner who is the last Briton to win an Olympic medal, a bronze, in the marathon. And that was in Los Angeles in 1984. Also has had a career as a pharmacist, a chemist. And he brought out his autobiography in 2009 called From Last to First. Unusual title because it's always tempting to say from first to last. But in his case, From Last to First, I read it when it came out. And in the build-up to our interview now, me in London, Charlie in the northeast of England in County Durham, I read it again. And I found it just as interesting. Yes. It's about athletics and your running career and how you won a bronze, but there are also lessons for life. And I give it as a little subtitle. There are many fascinating lines in there. You say, Olympic medals are not meant to be won by ordinary people. So how come I won a medal? I'm paraphrasing. Let's go to how you start the book. It's the afternoon of the Olympic marathon. In Los Angeles, 1984, you're in the Santa Monica, what we might call locker room changing area arena. The best marathon runners in the world are there. And frankly, you seem to be having a panic attack. Can you just take us back to that time and how you coped with that?
Yes, I remember it well, even though it was so long ago. I had been extremely nervous for several days beforehand, leading up to what obviously was the biggest race of my entire life. When I got into that check-in room, preparation room before the race began, and I was in the same space as every top-class marathon runner in the world, it really struck me what I was up against. And my nervousness got even worse. And I realized, luckily, that I was close to getting out of control and really, really losing it and struggling to tie the laces on my racing shoes. So I went outside into the sunshine, which everyone was avoiding, just to be alone. And I tried to calm myself down, and I thought about it, and I thought, every top marathon runner in the world is here. And I was seeing that, obviously, as a problem. And when I was outside by myself and I could think more clearly, I thought, that isn't a problem, that's an opportunity. That is, I only need to run one fantastic race, best race of my life, and I have the opportunity to beat all the best marathon runners in the world in one go. And I didn't actually think I was going to beat them all, but that thought completely turned me. I was still nervous, but I wasn't losing it. I was using the nerves to boost my performance. And that simple moment when I thought like that switched things around for me and made a huge difference to how I performed that day.
That lesson, because you turned it around, and I'm sure many of our listeners, and me included, we're never going to be in an Olympic final, which the marathon was. But we all know the experience of new day at school, new job, new home, new relationship, and that feeling, that churning in the stomach. I mean, I, as a journalist, I still get the churning in the stomach. I get it before setting up the interview with you, and it doesn't go away. But you try and think of ways of channeling, instead of nervous exhaustion, adrenaline, and you seemed to channel it in a positive way. And as you got into the race, or just let backtrack, something else I noticed in your book, before you went outside, you saw, as we've said, some of the best in the world, but some people were making mistakes. You mentioned there's a couple of guys warming up far too much. So even the best people seemed, some of them at least, seemed not to be handling the situation well.
Well, I also realised probably later that everyone else was probably just as nervous as I was. And it's just a very common thing. I think there'd be something very odd about you if you weren't nervous 15 minutes before an Olympic final, because there's so much at stake. And you're nervous about how well you might do, but you're also nervous that this is the biggest event of your life and you may make an awful mess of it. But also doing exceptionally well may change your life. So there's a huge amount at stake personally, and it is viewed all over the world, and millions and millions of people are watching you, and that also puts another layer of pressure onto you. So, but I think everybody feels that as well. But when you, the individual, are feeling it, you don't appreciate that. You only think, I'm the one racked with nerves.
Let's get you into the race. The gun goes, you've got a lap and a bit in the stadium as ever, then you're out on the road in Los Angeles. And how are you then feeling going up to the halfway point? I mean, we know in the marathon, usually 30 kilometers, 35 kilometers, that's when it really unfolds. But of course, you've got to get to that point. How are those early stages for you and the people around you?
Well, the early stage, the very early stage, the first few miles were fine. After a couple of miles of running, I settled into a nice rhythm, felt comfortable, and that nervousness had gone. There was still very much very heightened focus and awareness of what I was doing, but that churning in the stomach was completely gone. I was doing what I'd come to do, and we ran in large groups for a long way. But actually, there was a very crucial moment after only 10 kilometres, where a small group of African runners who tended to run very erratically went to the front and really picked up the pace. And my initial thought was, it's crazy to go this fast in this heat, because it was exceptionally hot for running a marathon. And my first thought was, look, we'll let them go. It's far too early. But then as I watched, I saw who was going in this group, and a lot of the top people were going with it. And I thought, well, I cannot let these people get away. So I had to run a very hard mile or so, about 6 miles to 7 miles. And I managed to get onto this leading group, which then slowed down a little bit, went back to a more sensible pace. But there were about 10 of us. And those 10 of us were away from the rest of them for the rest of the race. So that decision at only 6 miles to take the aggressive approach was absolutely essential, because people who didn't do that never managed to catch the leading group.
Let's just check on the quality, as you say, of that leading group. It was a kind of now or never. Just from memory, I mean, was it, I think, Toshihiko Seiko, Japanese, who won Boston, and Yuma Ikanga, Tanzania, and was the world champion from Australia, Rob Di Castella, was he amongst that group?
Yes, he was. And Carlos Lopez, a double world cross-country champion. John Tracy, a double world cross-country champion as well. It was a very international group. There was an Australian, a Briton, an Irishman, a Portuguese, two people from Djibouti. It was the world represented in a group of 10.
That's Olympic marathon bronze medalist Charlie Spedding. And Charlie was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards. Finally, the sunny side of sports remembers former Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Don Sutton, who died Tuesday at 75. Sutton paid tribute to his father during his induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1998.
He taught me more about discipline than any Marine drill sergeant. He taught me more about compassion than any doctor. He taught me more about teamwork than any of my managers. He taught me how to separate my family and my work. I never knew a day when my dad, Howard Sutton, didn't get up and go to work. He gave me my work ethic.
Hall of Fame pitcher Don Sutton, who died Tuesday at 75. And that wraps up the January 20th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.